Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This week, we're throwing it back, because y'all know can't nobody throw it back like a thought-ass thought. We're revisiting our transcendent, resplendent, sexy, silly, funny conversation with our Lord and Savior, Channy Nicholas. Take a listen, and if you're still an astrology holdout, take a ride on Saturn's cock ring and explore Uranus. Take it away.
Welcome to Food for Thought, a podcast gabfest where in a multiracial mix of queer writers gather around the table to talk about sex, identity, culture, what we like to read, and who we like to read.
Yes, 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 yes.
Food for Thought, a show where the witches hunt you.
Done.
I'm
Done.
Fran. I'm a writer. I'm an editor. And I'm on my third night out in Los Angeles, which is why I sound like Lindsay Lohan.
I'm Dennis Norris II, and I'm a reader, a writer, a former figure skater. And despite the fact that I am a grown-ass woman, I still giggle at jokes about Uranus.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, my God.
He's flirting with me.
I'm so ready. I will flirt with you all night long.
I am Joseph Osmondson, scientist, nonfiction writer, and I need a man to take a chance on a love that will burn hot enough to last.
Oh. Sentimental.
Yes.
Wow. I'm Channy Nicholas, and I'm an astrologer and a writer. And I don't know how to say Uranus.
You know, some people believe in God. Me, myself, I believe in Channy Nicholas. In the studio, we have astrologer.
No pressure, though. No pressure.
Astrologer extraordinaire, high priestess of queer witch Twitter, Channy. Thank you so much for joining
you.
Us
today.
Thank
in
you
for
so
tea.
Much for having me.
What do we have on the menu this week, Joseph?
Yeah, this week we swipe left on Geminis, as always. Oh. We fix your life the way only a good Virgo can. Mm. For our main course, we look for answers in the stars. And for our dessert, we give you some sex education. Take it away. Mm.
I'm feeling a little peckish, so let's start the top of this show the way any good top should. A little tease, a little something to wet your palates and minds. It's the amuse-bouche. And today we're going to amuse your bouches with a little game of swipe right, swipe left. We're treating it like Tinder, so swiping left is like the bad thing and swiping right is like the good thing. I personally don't use Tinder, but, you know, I've heard that the kids like it. Okay, so swipe right, swipe left. Lindsay Lohan's new reality show, Beach Club.
Gosh, I haven't seen it.
Full disclosure, I also have not seen it.
No, so I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it, but I'm so happy it exists. I am absolutely swiping right.
Mm. I want her to thrive. I also swipe right. She's been through so much. Mm.
Channy is looking at Joseph with the utmost disbelief.
I just astrally projected. Like, I am no longer a sentient
being.
Channy
has instantly become my favorite guest to ever be on Food
My
for
God. Channy's
one
look.
One day I'll learn how to control that.
Your
that
look was totally meaner than anything that Matt Rogers said to me.
Control it. Never learn how to control it.
What happened is everything that she's done, like for the past 10 years, kind of flashed before my eyes. And I was like, do we care anymore? Does she need to take up any more space? Is she done? Can't someone else go now? I don't know if we need to give a white woman that is that messy another shot.
That is true. I don't know.
Thank you, Channy, for keeping it real. Okay.
I guess that's left.
That is a hard left.
That's a hard left. Okay,
you understand the game. Okay. You definitely understand the game.
Swipe right, swipe left, Scorpios.
Oh, God.
Channy.
Channy's like, how are you feeling, Channy? She's sweating. She's sweating.
I feel like I have to like rep for my entire profession. I don't like the question.
I swipe right on sleeping with Scorpios and swipe left on literally any other activity with them.
Oh, that's so rude. Oh my God, Kenya.
Oh. She'll be fine.
I swipe right on Scorpios. I'm always ready for a good time. Like, wow. Let's keep it exciting and interesting.
I swipe left on sun sign bashing.
Oh.
We're stereotyping.
Ooh. Yes.
That's the real.
Hope you didn't listen to the rest of our season. anyways, let me just scrap the rest of the 50 minutes of material that I have here. Do you want to come back in an hour? Swipe right, swipe left, deadlines.
Wow.
We have all been...
Channy's reactions, the nonverbals are so strong.
I'm fully attacking Channy right now because she has a book with deadline in like 5 days.
It's very soon.
I will swipe right. They keep me on track. I need them in order to create work. I swipe right.
I also swipe right. They're great.
Interesting.
I mean, come on. Have you met me? What's a deadline? I don't know.
Dennis literally does not.
Yes.
Messy.
I mean, it works. It works for you?
It does. It does work for me.
To an extent.
Failing.
See, I love that. It doesn't work for me. And my deadline is really the moon most of the time. And then other deadlines, it's like they're good for me. But also with the big deadlines,
yeah,
sometimes they don't work. And then I just feel guilt.
Shame. It's not a cute thing.
Yeah.
They make me feel very anxious.
Anxiety.
I have a lot of anxiety around them. But they do, you know, it gives me something to shoot towards. And one of the things I like about working in academia is sort of the cycle of stress and then release.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I like deadlines for that. It's like, I'm anxious, it's done. And then I sort of give myself a breath.
Yeah. This is the first book I've ever written. And
it's
so
horrible.
The release,
no one should
and
ever
the release
do it.
Is never, it's like it will never come.
Yeah.
So it's so hard to keep myself creatively like on track and understanding like how to recoup the energy.
Very, very true.
It's just like out and then 7 miles more of work and then
touring and then press and it's crazy.
But even just to get through the editing process, it's like how then I have to oh my God, all the other little anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Swipe right, swipe left, Michelle Obama's Balenciaga boots.
All together.
Swipe right.
So hard right.
Swipe right.
Swipe right, swipe left. The TV show Charmed.
The new one or the old one?
Will you tell me?
Well, I was thinking the new one, the
reboot.
You like
the new one?
No. I'm not saying I like it. I'm saying I put it on the question because there was a lot of controversy around rebooting Charmed.
Tell me
about
it. And I
was curious
to know
what people
thought.
Did it.
What's
the way they did it? They cast folks of a certain ethnicity for a reason, but then they weren't that. And then they also were casting women of color to still be witches in a way that was very Eurocentric instead of going into their own personal lineages of witchness, witchhood, you want to say, witchcraft. So it was like a lot of misses. It was like it seemed like a lot of missed opportunities. Because how fascinating would it be to go into different lineages
of witchcraft and sorcery and histories. I mean, geographically, there's got to be so many different things there.
And why are we never talking about indigenous ways of living on the earth, which is what witchcraft is, or what we talk about when we're talking about witches, and why are we here always creating things and never having the original people as part of it? But
amazing.
Probably be a similar answer, but swipe right, swipe left, the new Sabrina the Teenage Witch series. Did you watch it, Jenny?
I felt like that was also... Yes, I did watch it. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch the special Christmas thing or whatever.
No, I couldn't either.
But I felt like it was also such a missed opportunity because why are we even putting the patriarchy in the center of the story in the fucking first place?
Just have it be
female-dominated, femme-dominated witchery. What's the point?
And they already
of the
had,
devil.
They were inspired by feminism. Like there were feminist plot points in that series that never really came to fruition because they constantly had to report to the men, you know, or like be beholden to men's plot points in some way, you know?
And the one black character is on house arrest the whole time.
The one black queer, the one queer character as well, kind of. Like it was just like
a mess.
It is.
Swipe right, swipe left, Lizzo.
Oh, swipe right.
Right.
I'm
obsessed. One of my
favorites. What a hell of a phone. I love her. Also, that her new song, Juice, I'm sorry, I'm obsessed.
It's incredible. The video is incredible, the visuals. And she just works so hard. And she is giving us everything every day.
Mm-hmm. Everything,
she is giving
everything
us
everything
content every single day.
Her Instagram is amazing.
I can say, like, she is as joyous and as beautiful and as loving and as sweet and as charming in real life as she is.
Aww.
And that she is a total gem of a human being. I think she's just total love. Like, I adore her.
I love it.
Professionally, personally, all
what
of
sign
it.
Is she again?
She's Taurus.
Oh, right. Oh, so happy.
You knew that. Oh, that
but makes she has so a really, but more than that, she has a really big Jupiter signature. Mm-hmm. So her, like, abundance and her ability to give and her ability to be big and her ability to, like, kind of, like, bounce back. And her whole thing is, like, Teflon. You know, like, she's like, I'm going to be happy and I'm going to be loud and I'm going to be myself. And that's very Jupiter. So that's very much her Jupiter sun. It's not really Taurian.
That also makes sense.
Amazing.
True. And I can only say that because she wanted me to do her chart for Teen Vogue. And then she also put out her astrology, like, yesterday on Instagram or whatever. I'm not saying anything that
that isn't out there.
Yeah.
Okay, swipe right, swipe left, taking a break from social media.
Right.
In theory, sounds like a great idea. I personally
What does a break constitute as? Like an hour? a day, a weekend.
A day or a weekend or at times weeks. Like our co-host Tommy, who's not here, like he'll delete his social media.
Deletes it for
months.
Really? Yeah. Does he get so much done?
He gets so much more work done.
The girl has cranked out 4 books in 4 years.
And it's when it comes back to your question about deadlines. It's like Tommy self-imposes these deadlines. And then as they approach and he's not done the work, deletes all social media.
I also don't want to glorify this because Tommy's a sociopath.
Yes, absolutely correct. 100% true. I increasingly use social media as a place to workshop writing.
Yes.
So in a way, I think it's really hard for those of us whose social media presence is a part of our job as well.
Yeah. It's also like going into the book that you have, like writing like prompts, right?
I go there
for prompts and I'm like, that's an interesting way to say that or think about that or that. So I do go in there for inspiration and then lose 7 hours.
I definitely do accidental social media breaks where I'm like hiking and then there's no cell phone service, right? And I think that I find to be really restorative, but I don't necessarily go to do that thing because it's going to be a social media break. It's just like to get out of my life and routine, but it ends up being that.
When I have dinner with you or when I'm hanging out with you, absolutely no phone.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very important. I don't think I could ever workshop my work in a social media space.
Yeah.
Primarily because I, you know, don't trust other people's opinions.
I love other people's opinions.
I'm just kidding. I'm being facetious.
No, you're not.
Swipe right, swipe left, Priyanka Chopra and Nick Jonas getting married. And that sounds like a great place to end.
Get out your coin purses, benches. It's time for Penny for Your Thoughts.
That's right. This is the segment we're in. You know, as Joseph says, three absolutely horrible trash can't get their lives together people and Channy Nicholas will answer to the questions that y'all send through each week. Just to clarify again, we are deeply unqualified to answer these questions.
I'm a doctor.
Shut up. I'm a doctor, Joseph. I'm always trying for doctor erasure.
Dr. Joseph Osmondson?
Shut up. How dare you? But we had some good ones this week. And honestly, like, it's just me. It's me pretending pretending to write in so that I can get advice from Channy
One of
Nicholas.
Your 17 Finstas.
That's truly it. Okay, so the first one we got in is, how have you all dealt with the dreaded imposter syndrome in your career, life, love, or sexuality? At times, I feel unworthy of love and my career, and I'm trying to change my own mind. If I had an answer for that, I feel like, you know, I would be doing a lot better. But I think imposter syndrome is something that at least I can speak for the thoughts, that is something that we all deal with pretty consistently. Especially as queer people, I feel like we are just constantly told multiple times that we are, you know, less extraordinary than we actually are. And that, you know, sets us back a little bit. But I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that is frustrating to me about imposter syndrome, and I think why it's a syndrome, is I always think it'll go away. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, once I get my PhD, it'll go away. Mm-hmm. Like, once I publish a book, it'll go away. Once I do X, it'll go away. And it just never does. It kind of has a lot to do with me with my class issues as well. Like, I'll never not feel poor, I think, because I spent my entire foundational portion of my life feeling poor. And so I try to, you know, it's on the one hand, you try to undo the negative self-talk, like actively be like, oh, that thought pattern is toxic and it's not healthy for me and it's not true. And on the other hand, it's like, I really have to accept that, you know, issues of class and queerness and imposter syndrome are just a part of who I am. Mm-hmm. And it's all, and it also kind of motivates me to work really hard and do better. So it's like, it's both trying to undo, but also just accept that it's going to be a component of my life, I guess.
Yeah. No, I think that that's a really wise point of view. I think for me, this is like a super tough question because, like, for most people, it's something that I'm always dealing with, being brown, being queer, being a creative and trying to build a career in a creative space. But there's a couple of ways in which I think I can talk about it. Like, one is that the two biggest places in my life where I tend to feel imposter syndrome is in love and romance. It's not so much feeling like I don't deserve those things as a queer person. It's more like when I really fall hard for someone, it can sometimes be really difficult for me to understand why they might be interested in me. And so that feels like imposter syndrome in a slightly different way, like imposter syndrome in the context of the two of us. And so that's something that I sort of always have to just like sort of trying to critique why I feel that way and think through that has to sort of stay on a low burn in my head and in my heart. And the other place where I sometimes feel it is in my career. And I try to actually, what I try to do is flip it around. So I try to think, okay, let's think about why I feel imposter syndrome here. I feel imposter syndrome here possibly because of something that I've accomplished at my age, possibly because of something that I've accomplished as a person of color or a queer person in an area where perhaps there aren't a lot of us. Mm-hmm. And then I try to look at that fact. Like if society is telling me that I shouldn't be in this position and I'm still in this position, like it's okay for me to feel a little bit like an imposter because I'm actually not an imposter. Like if I'm in this position that I'm not supposed to be in, then actually like that's a good thing. And I just have to ask myself, like, step up to the plate and do what you're trying to do. So I sort of try to flip it into like feeling good about the fact that I'm doing something that maybe I like shouldn't be doing or like that I might feel like I'm not qualified to do. Does that make any sense? Or is that crazy?
So what I was going to say, I think it's the other way of how to say what you're saying, is that I think it's important to interrogate what we feel like an imposter within. Mm-hmm. Instead of interrogating the imposter syndrome, say, well, what is the thing? What is that professional thing that I think I'm an imposter of? Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck is that? Mm-hmm. Because nobody is perfect or ready or done or complete in and of themselves in any way, shape, or form, because we're all supposed to be growing and learning and evolving. Mm-hmm. And so why not interrogate the system that tells me there's a place to get to that I am not ever going to fit into? So when you were talking, I was also thinking of, in kind of more personal ways, how that can land with me. Like if I'm in spaces with my wife where our union is like not at all recognized, it's really intense to be in places where people are like, oh, that's, when are you getting married to an opposite sex person? Like we get asked stuff like that a lot. And even after we say that we're married, people like don't hear it or don't register it.
God, people are like, trash.
In certain situations, in certain contexts, right? And so what has to then arise from the self is a like, fuck that system that where you can't even, I say the words, they don't even land in you because it's not part of your reality. Mm-hmm. So like, let's deconstruct that reality, interrogate it and say, why can't this exist as it's existed throughout time in your reality? Like, where the fuck am I?
Right, exactly.
And it's so easy to have that feel like that comes in at you and can come in into your romantic spaces, into your erotic self, and the erotic self is the creative self. So our work and our sex and our everything in between, it's all connected, right? So however I'm able to find a way to connect and have a relationship with that and trust it more than the systems that I'm in,
exactly,
the freer I am to do what I need to do with it.
Right. Yes. Because that, like, that quintessential perfect version of your sexual self or your career self or whatever is such an artifice. Like, it just, it's not a thing. Yeah. I also, this is really unfortunate, but I'm someone who, like, really can't hear a positive thing said about me. I really can't believe a positive thing said about me unless someone tells me over and over and over again. So, like, another answer to this question is, like, if you surround yourself with people that are constantly reminding you that you're worthy of the things that you're pursuing, that you're worthy of the things that that you're trying to accomplish, and that you don't have to, you know, as you say, subscribe to this, like, artifice or whatever. Yeah. I think those people have been kind of, like, the most life-giving and life-saving, like, you know, things that have, like, made me believe that I could do honestly anything.
On the career side, I find, as someone who's trying to negotiate a career that is not down a traditional path, where I have, like, a job and a creative practice and all of it is work all of the time, but, like, I'm kind of saying fuck you to the norms that say if you're a college teacher, you can't also write about sex openly, right? Yeah. And, like, that is both deeply queer and, like, has a lot to do with late capitalism, because, like, one job is often not enough to support us, and creative workers always have to have a hustle, right? Yeah. And I feel like I get a lot of imposter syndrome from that, because we're not supposed to act that way. It's like you're supposed to have a career and a job, and that's supposed to pay the bills, and it's sort of, that's supposed to be your life. And so it's been really tough for me to negotiate. And I think you're right. It's about looking inside and being excited about your projects and understanding yourself and kind of saying fuck you to the system that tries to constrain the possibilities of your career.
Right. And then I also like what you said about having it make you more competitive. Mm-hmm. Like, I like the way in which my competitive self wants to beat out that part of me that feels like an imposter, right? Like, okay, well, fuck you. Then I'll learn more and I'll get better and I'll work harder and I'll be smarter about what it is that I'm doing, and I will find my way of doing this.
That's right.
So,
power to that.
One more. How do you make friends as an adult? Lol. All of us are like, oh.
You don't. Next question.
You will die alone.
Yeah. No. Jacob.
You work with people that you think are interesting.
This person says, they say, I just moved to a new city and have to move again in the next year thanks to your immigration system.
Fuck America.
First of all, for the person who asked this question, like, we're so sorry that's happening to you. Like, this is, like, absolutely, we live in a bogus country, and, like, you know, as someone who's, like, you know, moved into many different cities in very short amounts of time, I know that it's, like, moving has been, like, the hardest thing that I've ever had to do. Like, I would venture to say that moving to New York in a lot of ways was almost harder than coming out of the closet. Like, it was a really, really tough thing, you know? I don't know how to begin to answer this question when it comes to making friends. I always go for it.
I think you volunteer. Mm-hmm. And you show up consistently and repetitively and as much as you possibly can for whatever interests you. You go, you're early, you say, I can do this, I can be of service this way. You make yourself available. I think that I think being of service is the best way to do that. And then to find people that you're also, like, that you're have all the same interests with and can do a project with. Because if you're not in school, taking a class is a great way to meet people sometimes. Mm-hmm. But, like, if you're not in school, like, finding colleagues in some way, like, you all created this podcast, not because someone was like, I'm going to give you $50 million to do it, but because probably you wanted to, like, come together and have an interesting conversation and have relationship. And this is a very related way of being, right?
I really love your use of the word colleague, too, because I think colleague has, like, this kind of career-oriented weight to it, and it shouldn't have to have that. Like, a colleague, the definition of a colleague should be people that you work laterally with on truly anything, or people that you are who are peers with, but you also work alongside or adjacent to each other. Like, that's a colleague.
As I was thinking about how I made friends moving through grad school and out of grad school, I read, like, one of those pop psychology articles that said that the two things that make friendships kind of naturally happen are like lots of informal interactions and like seeing someone consistently without having to make plans, right? So it's like being able to like shoot the shit, talk like about a TV show or like those small informal interactions that are low pressure,
those
and then sort of the consistency. And that's why it's easy to make friends at work, right? And that's why it's easy to make friends, I think, volunteering or having, you know, doing, it's so cliche, but doing like a sports team, right? Those so those like those routine informal interactions where you're they're low pressure and you build up little by little.
And tacking onto that, I always tell people, because I'm someone who deals with like a lot of social anxiety. There are a lot of reasons why it's like difficult to step out the door sometimes. And I, you know, if you're someone like that at home, I always say like, think about how you would treat friendship or the act of like trying to go and make friends or going to volunteer, putting yourself out there if you were paid a certain dollar amount an hour to do it. If you treated it like your job, if you treated it like your, if you treated it like with in a way that like, you know, had a systemized, you know, if you had like a reward system of some kind, like think about like how you would go about that. But I don't know. I know that's like Joe's like cringing because he's like, why are you making this a capitalist endeavor?
I was like, such a tourist.
I know. Really,
and I'm but a Pisces,
like, whatever works,
so I'm like, no, I'm someone
who
feels wrong to
when things are too amorphous. I have to like concretize them with like weird structures or with rules. And I know that's so stupid, but if that trick works for you, you know that happens. Yeah. But another thing that I was gonna say is because this person is specifically in like a transient space; they're moving twice in 2 years.
Hard.
I super duper believe in the power of internet friends and how much, how life-saving that can be. And like, you know, find your community online, wherever that may be, whether, you know, it's like in a Facebook group or whether it's on like Pottermore.com or like on a Tori Amos messaging board or, you know, whatever that you want to, whatever place you like, find people that are like you on the internet.
And that shit is so real. Like, I mean, a lot of people love Roxane Gay. She's talked about the fact that she made friends when she was in graduate school and in a really rural place where she didn't know anyone through, through Twitter, through doing Scrabble online. Like, these things are, I mean, it's not the way that, like, I've necessarily done it, but I would. It's digital friendship is really real.
It's time we get into the meat of our discussion, the thought process, if you will, spelled T-H-O-T.
T-H-O-T.
And for our healthy helping of meat and potatoes today, the theme of this episode is astrology. When I was just a young girl growing up in a conservative suburb of Chicago, I was told by my mother that astrology was the devil. No offense to astrology, but my mother also thought that Harry Potter was the devil, as well as Hocus Pocus, Olivia Newton-John, and all Hot Topic stores. But it's interesting to me looking back now that the very reason my mother was trying to warn me of what she thought was kind of like a gateway drug into devil worship was actually like the very thing that would help me find a sense of spirituality that I had abandoned for almost a decade. The very, you know, that my parents had given me. What was she scared of anyway? And I think
she was afraid of you becoming exactly who you are right now.
And then God gave her a queer witch son.
Who dresses in all black with red nails.
And anyways, to anyone who doesn't really subscribe to astrology in general as like a thing, like what do they fear? So I'm curious, like, Chani, we were talking a little bit off the mic about this.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
But like, what do you think people fear in astrology when they fear it?
I think the reason why people fear astrology so much is that it is such an ancient fear of two things. One, of being in contact with system that can communicate directly to you. Two, of being fucked over by people that don't have your best intentions at heart. And that's real, because human beings are astrologers, and human beings are all kinds of wonderful and messy and horrible and have, so like any profession, there are, you know, people with a great agenda and people that don't have. And so we have, we astrologers have been mostly for most of, you know, Western history, kind of like pushed into a corner of people that don't have good intentions. So we're just trying to get your money, and we're just trying to freak you out and get you to come back and get another reading and like have you be hooked on our information, kind of thing. So wow, we need you to need us.
That doesn't sound anything like organized religion.
Irish Catholic, you said.
That doesn't sound familiar to me at all. They want my money, and they want me to keep coming back to give confession because I've done horrible things. I mean,
So like we were in a, like they thought, they felt like we were a threat.
Yeah.
So the Catholic Church, Christian, how do you say that? It's the Catholic Church, is the institution.
Yeah.
Felt a threat. But then, and then, so then you look at other like religions, like bigger religions like Judaism, and like rabbi, there is a rabbi that is a very famous rabbi, Abraham Ibn Ezra, who other rabbis to this day will quote because he's known as a rabbi and a Jewish philosopher, but he was also an astrologer.
Oh, wow.
And a very like important astrologer, because he was translating texts from much earlier. And so he's part of both of those traditions. Mm-hmm. But in Jewish community, in like traditional Jewish community or more conservative Jewish community, you would never hear anyone talk about astrology because it's against God. Mm-hmm. Because I think that as the world, as the Western world, we can say, like, became more and more like having to deal with the puritanical nature of Christianity or the Catholic Church, then everybody else had to too.
Right.
More all other religions or ways of being had to like strip themselves of any kind of notions of magic or connection to the earth. Because really, astrology is just an observation of the sky,
right?
And it's an observation of the correlation of the nature of the planets and then the nature of minerals and plants and herbs and temperaments in the body here on Earth.
Right.
So it's just correlative.
I really like that. I think it's important to define astrology actually for our listeners. And I also wondering what to you, because you gave us a little bit of it, but what to you is like the biggest like a bad definition of astrology? What's the one that everyone else says that you're like,
The one that is very, very, very understandably prolific and also incredibly shallow is signs.
Exactly.
It's just to base an entire system of knowledge, which again is about the observation of the quality of light and rhythm of planets in the sky down to the little pieces of sky that they move through based on the constellations. They're two parts of the same system, but they're necessary. Like signs are places where planets live and inhabit and rule and have better times in and worse times in, but they are not the be all end all. So we've boiled down everything because memes are fun.
Dennis, you're someone who doesn't know anything about astrology.
Literally nothing. I'll tell people, oh, I'm a Sagittarius, and then they'll say something like, oh, that means you're blah, blah, blah. And I'm like,
What do you think? I want to know what you think astrology is so that we can, you know, understand how it's misunderstood.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm just kidding.
Messy. Alex says messy.
What I'm actually getting through to is, like, I think for a really long time, I thought of astrology as divination, as something that is supposed to, like, foreclose on my future.
Right. Change it, even.
And I think that when people's only entry points are, like, reading horoscopes, like, in the newspaper, that might be what they're thinking. That's not really how like my understanding of astrology has like grown, you know? I think.
Well, there's also, it's good to note that there is a branch of astrology that can be used specifically for divination. So you could come to me with a question and ask it to me. And the moment that I hear it,
Okay.
I take a snapshot of the sky and I read an answer for you based on the moment that you based on the moment that I understand your question.
Okay.
There is a chart for that, and that can be used to tell you, yes, it's a good idea. Doesn't look like a good idea. Right. It's going to have some problems. It might come to pass, but it might not be what you think. Okay. Or yes, it's a total go.
Wow, fascinating.
So there is that way that you can use it, but then there's also the moment that you take your first breath. There's a snapshot of the sky, you become the astrological amulet of that moment.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Right?
And so all the properties in that moment are constellated in you. And as you live and unpack your life and unpack your purpose and struggle and pursue and triumph and fail and all those things, you get to understand the ways in which that constellation can be lived. But you have the choice of how you live inside of that constellation, inside of that amulet.
Yeah.
But the amulet is itself.
I love that. That is so meaningful to me. And really, one of the things that astrology did for me as I was growing through my 20s and unpacking my life and figuring out who I was it helped me unpack a lot of toxic masculinity, actually, because I've always been a very emotional person.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, because I'm trained as a scientist, right? So I was sort of trained to reject other epistemologies, like, you know, Western Enlightenment rationality tells you that that's the one way to access capital T, the truth, and that other epistemologies are not serious, right? Yeah. And I had a good friend who was one of the smartest people I know, so I really respected her, and she kind of opened me up to astrology and did my first reading. And when I read about the emotional and creative nature of Pisces, it unlocked something in me, and it made me feel okay. It made me feel okay in, like, you know, capitalism, masculinity. Patriarchy was telling me that as a man, I had to be hard and not creative and practical. Mm-hmm. And I had all of these things inside of me all along that my amulet was just crying, just always crying, you know, but I couldn't stop crying, and I fought that for so many years, and astrology helped unlock that for me and accept it as a beautiful thing and as a thing that gave me power.
Yeah.
And that, you know, rejecting toxic masculinity also gave me a power.
Yes.
So the storytelling epistemology of astrology helped me heal a lot from what had been a youth where I couldn't see those things.
I'm curious because I know Joe is not this scientist, but what would you say to a scientist? Not that you would ever really want to, like, reckon with this person, but what would you say to a scientist that's looking to debunk or challenge you in astrology? Again, not that you would give that person time or energy, but
cool. Like, tell me what you know about astrology.
And and they would
how
be like,
does
and
it
they
work?
Would, and they'd be like, I don't know.
They'd be like, I don't know.
And then you also, let's talk about the history of it. So I don't care if you believe in, I don't even know what it means to believe in astrology.
Exactly.
But it's like, let's talk about the history of science, astronomy, astrology, and medicine, because they all were the same thing. Mm-hmm. I had a really interesting conversation with this doctor, Dr. Darian. Mm-hmm. I think that's what his IG is, right? Mm-hmm. Amazing person. And we had like a 5-minute conversation about medicine and astrology. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, I never knew that. That's so cool. I could have a conversation with you for hours about this.
Yeah.
Because there's properties in the body that were originally related to the planets they still show up in the same way. So he and I can have a conversation about medical conditions in the body, and we can be talking two languages that are related but different, but come to the same conclusion.
Yeah. And reach at the same point.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. Amazing.
Because it's about properties. We're talking about universal properties. So the planets are always correlating to the universal properties in the body and on the earth. So, and they don't change, right? Like, fire is fire, earth is earth, water is water, air is air. And those things are found in the sky as well as on the earth and in our bodies. So it's all related. And any kind of other system of medicine, that will be there too, in its roots.
So I know virtually nothing about astrology, but I'm just really resonating with this because it all sounds a lot like... So when I was in high school, I started studying a lot of other religions. I took religion courses, like, in my classwork.
Because Sagittarius.
And I'm like, okay. And it clocked. And I really came away from it for the first time in my life with the idea that, like, so many different systems of belief and systems of faith, and I began to understand how they were systems, mm-hmm. Were really just kind of like different paths towards the same destination. And then I began to sort of think about that in larger ways. So I began to think about the idea that, like, science, where there were some people in my sort of religious circle who were like, oh, science is anti-Christian, it's anti this, anti that, and I'm like, well, I'm taking science classes every day and I'm going to church every week, and none of this actually seems all that inconsistent. It all kind of seems like it actually, if you think about it in a different way, works together. Like it all works together. And so I don't know any of this really deeply. I've not studied science since high school. I've never really studied astrology, but this is the way that I have always sort of tried to look at it since I began to experience in that way. So kind of hearing you talk about that, about how the ways in which even these things that are bigger, like I've never really thought about medicine, I'm not a doctor, how they're all working together in one way, it makes so much sense to me. Like we're living on one world. That's, of course, part of a bunch of the other planets. But it just all makes sense to
me. We're created from everything is created from the same properties, right? Yeah. So if we really are stardust, then we're related to everything else around. We tend to think of ourselves as separate from, but these older systems help to kind of loop us back around. So that's like, I might talk about Mars in your chart, but when if you were coming to me for a medical situation and there was a problem with Mars, then it would be a problem with inflammation, which might be like rooted in a psychological problem of anger, which might be rooted in like a boundary crossing. And then when you look at the and then there might be like a raising of the blood to the surface of the skin, which would give you a rash or inflammation of some kind. And then we might look and realize that Mars is the only planet in the sky that's red. So Mars has always been related to those things because of the qualities of it, but also because what the ancients realize when they tracked it for hundreds of years, what happened when Mars did this and that and this. So there's a scientific way in which it's been studied for thousands of years, but I wouldn't call it a science per se.
So I mean, I think that I totally
it's correlation.
Totally agree with that. And I think the notion also is that, like, if you accept astrology, that means you reject quote unquote Western science. It's like, no, it's like two entirely different modes of understanding that inform one another and can inform you as a person, and they feed different portions of you. You're allowed to take ibuprofen for your inflammation, and also you know, like, try to understand in a deeper and different way where that might be coming from and how to fix it holistically.
Another thing that I think that will appeal to, like, a lot of our listeners and anybody with a creative life is that something that I love about astrology is, like, its ability to, like, build narratives. It's storytelling. It's like stringing things together and making conclusions and a version of, I mean, nothing replaces therapy except for therapy, but, like, it's a version, it has a therapeutic quality to it that I really love. And that's another reason why I really love tarot, like, and have just started to dabble in it, because it's like, I love the storytelling value. I love building narratives. I love characters. I love deciphering personality traits and, like, making that make sense.
And I will also add in my little Marxist rant that the notion that the only way to view the world is rational, that notion is in service of capitalism, white supremacy. Mm-hmm. It is in service of the status quo. It is in service of getting you to spend money on medicines and so it's like, you know, one can be critical of that and also just accept that epistemology, you know, sort of Western quote unquote rationality, quote unquote science, it can inform us and feed us. And it also gets us some of the same basic questions about at a more basic physical level, like, what is the nature of the universe? What is the nature of living beings? And, you know, those are philosophy, like questions of philosophy, right? Mm-hmm. So this notion that all of these epistemologies are separate is also false, right? They are very much in conversation with one another. And quantum theory in the late 20th century proved that, right? When science once again said, actually, observation alters the outcome of an experiment. And that then it sort of feeds back on itself to say that actually, okay, no.
Because you're in a relationship with what you're looking at.
You as an observer are in a relationship with what you're observing.
And because
which is what astrology is.
Exactly.
It's a relationship with what you're observing. So and how it might be observing you.
Exactly. And so I think these people who are like, Dennis just fell out of their chair.
I love that. And how it might be observing you.
So, like, these people who argue that, you know, how can you believe in astrology when we're, you know, unable to believe science and climate change. It's like you are that framework through which you're viewing
so limited.
These things in opposition
is
incredibly sad.
Yeah. Thank you, Joseph, for always bringing the show back to one of our key brand pillars, quantum theory of the late 20th century.
Yes, yes.
I really appreciate
it. I'm
that.
Schrodinger's thought right here.
Oh, my God.
Will I thought or will I not thought? It's up to you.
That's really good. Actually, I'm impressed. I'm curious about the personal relationship that you develop with people that you read for, people
question.
Because and I don't mean like intimately, but like you, I didn't ask you to, but when we got tea,
did give me your chart. So I don't know what you thought would happen. You gave me your chart.
Excuse me. No, the conversation was as follows. It was like, what are you again? Oh, you're a Taurus. And she said, "Are you? And what is your rising?" And I said, also Taurus. And then you said, give me your chart. I was asked.
And ran was like, with the receipts.
Let me set the record straight. Also, I went into this tea being like, the one thing you can't do, Fran, is give your chart to Chaney Nicholas. Like, that is labor. She deserves to be paid for
everyone,
that.
Like, everyone do does not, it. Everyone like, must
do
fucking
not give
do
her
it.
Your
yes.
fucking chart. And then you, I mean, I just, if you asked me to do anything, I would do it. The reason I'm telling this whole story is because, like, you did make me cry.
Fran has feelings.
She also looked at my chart for like 4 seconds and then laughed at it. And let me tell you.
Why did I laugh, Fran?
Let me tell you, dear listeners.
Why was this not recorded?
There is nothing more unsettling than Chaney Nicholas laughing at your birth chart.
Correct. Correct.
I'm so ready for
but
this.
But I laughed because.
Why? I don't remember.
Because you are doing exactly what your chart wants you to do.
Yeah.
So you are like so a clear manifestation of it.
Yeah.
So it's so when I look at charts like that and I know somebody, I'm like, well, this is just going to sound like I'm talking about you because you're doing a really good job of living this out.
Right.
It's much more fun for me when it's a stranger.
Yeah.
Because then I can impress them.
Right.
Then the read is like fresh.
Yeah. And I also know that that's like a common experience when people get their charts read, they have a really deep emotional reaction. Maybe because they didn't expect to hear such things about themselves. Yeah. And it's similarly in therapy or in when you like have a really good talk with a friend, when you unpack things like that, it just like it works. But I don't know. Like when you are reading for someone or when you're just talking about their chart in general, like do you like seek an intimate connection or are you very like, you know, pragmatic about it?
It really depends on the situation. So some people will come to a reading and each reading evokes a different response from me. Mm. And I have to really check myself in that response because sometimes I can get very like, I can get very kind of disciplinarian in a sense. I can get really like harsh. Mm-hmm. And so I have a very Saturn-y thing in my chart. And so I can be very like, look, da 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 da. And I have to like learn how to roll that back. And sometimes I think I don't do a very good job with it. But it depends on where the person's at and how receptive they are to what I'm saying. Not so that they are agreeing with everything that I'm saying, but it's about how self-reflective they are. And so when I say something, they can meet me in a place. If someone's not self-reflective, then I have to give them more empirical evidence of like, you did this on this day and in this month you had this thing. And I can do that. And I will do that. I'll throw that stuff down to create safety with somebody.
Wow.
To say like, I'm going to like carve out a section of time and we're going to talk about some of the bigger things that happened here, just so that you know where I'm coming from and what I'm looking at. And then I can go around and go into some more personal things. And some people are so defended, rightly so, and they have the right to be, but it's a lot more work for me. into the stuff where I'll, you know, there'll be like huge red flags in somebody's chart and I've got to get there if it's a reading, if it's a full out reading. And so it's always about what that person needs in that moment and how I can best serve them. And sometimes I leave those red flags alone. I don't open up everything, obviously, but when there's something that's standing in the way of what they want and I can see it clearly, then I need them to be willing to have that conversation with
me. To hear.
And most people that come to me are. Some people are not. And then it's funny what happens. Mm-hmm. I remember I had this reading a long time ago with this person who was, you know, like quite a figure in the queer community in the place that I was at the time. And I gave them this reading and I was like, and they just sat there with their arms crossed.
Oh, gosh.
Looking at me the whole time, gave me nothing. And I was like sweating bullets.
Oh, gosh.
It was also much earlier in my career, so I wasn't nearly as like confident. And I ended up being like, it's kind of like if, and I went on this whole rambling story. I just like made up a story about their chart. And they left and they were like not impressed with me and like gave me nothing.
Oh,
I like fell to pieces. It's a lot of anxiety when it doesn't work like that. And so a year later.
I can't wait for the comeuppance. I know it's coming.
A year later.
Or a couple, like it was a good amount of time, like 6 months or a year later. They came back to me and they were like, exactly what you said happened verbatim.
Oh.
And I was just riffing. So it was like something was obviously coming through so that this person could get checked.
Yeah.
But it not be from me. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so they were like aghast that everything had come to pass, as I said. And I wasn't even predicting. I don't love, like, my whole thing is not prediction. That's not like my jam. But I really love to talk about like where people's life purpose lies in their chart. Like, this is the area of your life that you must unpack and live into and explore and do. And if you do, you're going to feel satisfaction. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm not saying that everything will be like handed to you, but this is where meaning is for you in your life. And always people are like, that's exactly what I want to do, or that's exactly what I am doing. It's never off. I've never said that to somebody and been like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Wow. Yeah. So you all, we're going to turn off the recording devices and Channie's going to tell us all our life purposes. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes.
You signed up for this. No, I'm just kidding. Cute. Well, thank you, everyone.
Oh my God.
Thank you. I'm feeling like I'm full, but I could fit just one more thing inside me. Dennis knows what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
We are so excited that actually Channie is the person bringing the dessert for us today.
Yes.
What is the thing the end of this episode that you would recommend to all of our listeners?
So there is a new show on Netflix called Sex Education.
Mm-hmm. I love it already.
And it stars, well, one of the people in it is Gillian Anderson.
Oh, I love Gillian Anderson.
With her short white haircut. It is to die for. She plays a sex therapist who has a practice in her home, and she has a teenage son who has problems with his problem is that he can't masturbate, he can't come, he can't like be intimate with himself. He's probably, I guess they're like around 16 or something. So he has all of these huge sexual hangups.
At 16, that's all I did.
Right. So he's totally different than everybody in his school. And then you go into the universe of his school and it's just everybody's sexual escapades, problems, issues, da-da-da. And he, this is a minor spoiler alert because it happens, I think, in the second episode, but he becomes the sex therapist at the school.
Oh my God.
There are queer relationships.
Yes.
There are just like, they just like go everywhere. There's stuff about masturbation. There's like female masturbation, ejaculation, all the things, daddy issues, mama issues.
Dennis is only daddy issues ever.
Super cute, like, you know, foray into teenagehood, but also with the overlap of the mom and how she's, you know, what's the word? Inappropriate.
Fair.
And the impact on her son, and yet she's like a really loving mother, and everybody's like got a really nice complex character, and they give backstory on everybody, and it's sweet.
I mean, one thing that I'm very proud of, and with our very extremely slutty podcast, is our ability to like talk through and talk about things that are deemed taboo, and I love network as big as Netflix is like trying to put things out there that are addressing taboo like very unashamedly, especially as it comes to, as it pertains to sex education and sex therapy, which is a thing that like we are deprived of in this
and queerness.
Absolutely. And queerness.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
And the boys in it have a really, like, there's a, the two best friends, one's straight, one's not, and they have a really loving relationship. And they've been BFF since like 9 years old, and they hug and they dance and they dress up in drag to go to Hedwig, and like, it's a whole thing.
That's amazing.
I'm going to start crying because I don't, it has felt impossible for me to have straight male friends.
Oh my gosh.
Because I just was bullied by them all of my youth and even through college. So it's like a thing that feels really hard. And so that sort of loving relationship,
like,
from a straight man, I couldn't imagine.
Like, it's really sweet. It's great role modeling.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, that's amazing.
Thanks for that, Chan.
Yeah.
Thank you. I can't wait to go and watch it. This episode of Food for Thought was made possible by the generous, unequivocal support of Rosé and also our new home at Forever Dog. Our producer is our sexual North Star, Alexandra De Palma.
Yes, I will follow you anywhere, mama.
Truly. Our social media manager is the Allison Janney of the podcasting world, Christina Tucker. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, or Channy will literally hex you.
Yes!
I swear to God.
Do
we
it.
Make it happen. Okay. I'm Fran. You can find me at Fran Squish Co. on Instagram and Twitter, and also Venmo, honestly. If you want to be out there.
Yeah. I'm Dennis Norris II, and you can find me on Twitter at The Earl Denden, TheEarlTenden.
I'm Joseph Osmondson, and you can find me at www.josephosmondson.com.
That is such a good growl. I'm Chani Nicholas, and you can find me at ChaniNicholas.com.
Find us on Instagram at Gay Sluts Who Read, and join us on Facebook at Twitter at Food for Thought Pod, where each week we pin some questions at the top of our page to continue the discussion of this week's episode. Sign up for our newsletter to see a list of everything we are reading, show notes, and some extra delectable content at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. And finally, email us your questions, thoughts, concerns, and dick
pics
at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. As always, that is food, the number 4, and thoughts spelled how?
THOT.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.